Cardiff Carnival 25th anniversary project. Interviewer, Steve Fletcher. The venue is the Swicker office. The date is the 20th of October 2014. And the interviewee is Rob Smith. Rob, could you spell your name in full for us for the record?
R-O-B-E-R-T-S-M-I-T-H.
Thanks very much. Rob, amongst your many attributes, you are musical director and founder of Wonder Brass. Could you tell us a little bit about the origins of Wonder Brass?
Yeah, around the mid-80s, there was a workshop project run by the Welsh Jazz Society. And I was playing a lot with... Actually, when it started, when the Four Bars Inn opened, which is where it was based, it's now Dempsey's, when that opened, I was actually working with a dance company away in Ireland for a while. So when we came back, we kind of missed out on this place opening up. Yeah. You need to lower recording level, probably. Where's your recording level, but... input level. So yeah, that's better, isn't it? You can still hear me. Yeah, it's peaking around 12. Yeah, minus 12. That's what I go for. So suddenly this new venue had opened in Cardiff. This is going a long way around the houses, but. Myself and Jess Phillips, who I was working with a lot at that time, we just started going along to the workshop band, and they went through a lot of tutors really quickly. And at some point, after a couple of years or a year and a half or something, they said, well, why don't you run it? So we decided to run it. And we changed the way it worked, really. Instead of just being a load of people turning up and playing solos in a set order, we tried to build it into a functioning band, almost like a little big band, and we were ticking over with this quite nicely, doing the odd performance in the Four Bars. And then the carnival started up. Mass Carnival started up with Swicker in 1990, and you wanted street music, so basically we said, well, we've got all these musicians, let's use this workshop band to create the street music. So the first one was in 1990. I'd already worked with you on running some community music. Well, it was a kind of community music orchestra for the final Taliesin project. I believe it was the final Taliesin project, which was Mad Dog. So we put together a little community band for that, which was nothing really to do with the Jazz Society. It was completely set up by Swicker, and it was... bringing people in who are interested in community music, I suppose, and getting involved, but in a fairly non-specialised way. Just waiting for that peak to disappear. But so we did that, and we brought these two things together to create a street band for the first Mass Carnival. I think I wrote some music specially for it. I think I can remember the... It was very much based on soca music, that first one. So I worked out some original pieces, and we took part in the parade. And that gave a new dimension to the workshop band, really, because it meant that we didn't only have to play jazz, we could play street music, and I personally was very excited by this. A couple of years later, I'm training to be a community musician with Community Music Wales, and I have to start up a project for my final project as part of that. I mean, if it was running now, it'd be a master's. It was a really involved year-long course. It was way more than people have to do for a master's now, but for some reason it wasn't. So it was just a certificate in community music training, but... The final project, you had to start up something and run it and evaluate it. And I noticed that a lot of the people we were working with, the musicians, they wanted to show off. They wanted to play really long solos over jazz standards. Whereas me and Jess were more into building something communally and getting people to be more creatively involved. We were also into street music. I'd been to New Orleans in 1991. I think for the 1991 Mass, we brought Claude down to beef up the street band. because he worked with the Grand Union and he'd done loads of street music. He knows a hell of a lot about that kind of music. So we brought Claude Depper down in 1991. And in that year, I also got to go to New Orleans, total coincidence, and saw how street music could work in that context. So I was really, I think at that period, the early 90s, I got a real appetite for street music, street brass music, let's call it, because I thought it was something that was, I thought it was kind of, you know, nobody was really doing it around here. There's a couple of bands doing it, you know, the sort of politically motivated bands like the Fallout Band and things like that. But I thought there was a lot better way of doing it, a lot better. So anyway, the final project came up. I thought, all these guys, they don't really want to be in a street band, so I'm going to start up a street band. So the Garden Festival, Ebervale Garden Festival in 1992, they gave us the seed funding of 500 quid to start something up in the valleys. We found a very dynamic person called Denise Lord, and she'd put together a band for a theatre project about, I think, the year before, Valley of the Kings, I think it was called. And she was keen to try and get something going. So we teamed up with her and we started this little workshop in the valleys, in Pontypridd, in the Muni Arts Centre, actually, the first sessions were. And the first session, no, it was at Club of Bont, actually, but the first session, nobody turned up. And she said, don't miss out next week. Come in fortnight time and I'll get in touch with all the contacts that I made for Valley of the Kings and I'll make sure that there are people here. And so we said, okay. And we didn't have any option but to trust that she knew what she was doing. So we turned up 2 weeks later and there were about 10 people there. And we thought, well, we've got a project, you know, we'll run it for 10 weeks and they'll see it out. But after that 10 weeks, we performed a bit at the Garden Festival and a couple of selected venues in the valleys, really choice venues like the Gurness Estate, parading around the Gurness Estate, where people just came out of their houses and stared at you as if you'd just beamed down from Mars or something. And then the people who were in it were really didn't want to stop after 10 weeks. So then they got together and formed a committee and applied for the money to keep it going. And they got that money and it's still going. It's still going and it continues to go from strength to strength, up and down, but from strength to strength, really. And that's basically it. And that's a long-winded story. But that is... basically, there is this tension with working with jazz musicians and doing street music, is that a lot of jazz musicians, they just want to be in a club and playing. They've got this image of what jazz is about and it doesn't involve going out on the streets. If it does, it's in a warm climate. And it's but there are some of us in the band who are really enthusiastic about street music, and it's the enthusiasm of that few, that core, that's kept the street side of Wonder Brass going, really.
You've performed and led street bands in an extraordinary number of Cardiff carnivals. We've quickly totted them up. And you come to the grand total of 20 out of 25, which makes you a carnival hero.
Well, I've ticked the ones that I'm pretty sure we did, and I think it's 20. No, I think it's about 20.
I can well believe that. Yeah. Obviously, your forte is music, and the music is vitally important for giving the energy for groups to dance to. But in terms of costume and the various costumes that have been made for and provided for you and for Wonder Brass, are there any good, bad, or not, or good, bad, or ugly that stick in your mind? Stuff that worked or stuff that malfunctioned?
There was one. We once did a carnival. This must have been around the time that we started. Wonder Brass can't have been going for very long at this point, but we did a little section of mass with Chapter for Children. And we had these guys who were basically students looking for a summer work placement. They were art students. And they made these beautiful costumes. But they weren't used to mass, so they just made one-off costumes.
And so the costumes were beautiful, and the kids helped to design them, and the thing looked amazing. But they weren't really, you know, until you've actually walked a costume, you probably don't know much about comfort and things like that. And they came up with this amazing costume. It was, the fruit was the theme, and this amazing orange costume. They had nobody to walk it. So I just said, all right, well, it's not staying in the box. I'm going to walk it. So I decided I was going to play. And there are still photos of me wearing this, looking like Sun Ra or something. It's a beautiful costume, but it's bizarre.
Bright orange, I remember.
Bright orange, yeah, with sparkly stuff all over it, and extensions and things like that. The problem with it was that it had a sort of withy frame over the head, and it had this big hat on. And whenever the wind blew, it blew up and it pushed my chin up like that. So it caught me under the chin and pushed my chin up, which when you're playing a soprano sax is really uncomfortable. So I ended up like with cuts all over my chin and everything at the end of that parade. So that one left a mental scar. Basically the ones that really stick in your mind are the ones that they haven't really thought it through, or they've thought it through, but they have forgot to think about the practicalities of playing an instrument. So the best things are just to stick a bit of a hat on us and drape something over us and leave us in fairly comfortable clothing. Because a lot of the guys who design the costumes, it's better now because obviously they've done it a few times, but they forgot how hard we were working just to play the instrument sometimes, and to give us extra things to do and extra things to think about, it doesn't really work for musicians. So I've been on a lot of ones where bits of costume have been discarded as part of the parade, but that one stuck in the mind. Yeah,
it's interesting you mentioned stamina and exhaustion, and well, you didn't mention exhaustion, but I just have, and of course an average Cardiff Carnival parade would be an hour to 90 minutes. What's that like, trying to keep the energy up, or even just the physicality of your lungs must be the size of God knows what? I mean,
well, you have to pace yourself, right. And you know, you think, right, we're going to be going down St Mary Street, and if it's gone well, if it's a nice day, you know, you're going to get a big crowd in St Mary Street, and probably going to get to stop in St Mary Street as well, and so you kind of save your best material and a bit of energy for that. But basically, you either like it or you don't. And there's the people in Wonderbrass who they want to be in the band. In order to be in the band, you have to do parades. So they put up with having to do parades. And there are some in the band, and all the leaders of the band, this includes, who actually love doing parades because we've got this image of, you know, this romantic image of New Orleans parades and things like that. And we'd all love to be in a New Orleans parade. So we're trying to do that thing in Cardiff, and we really believe in it. And if you actually sign up for it and get into it, And because we've worked really hard on making this street music work without trying to copy the New Orleans thing, so we've drafted in arrangements from popular music that people in the crowd will recognise, you know, because in New Orleans they know all the traditional material, so they play Saints and everybody loves it, whereas we'll play Kanye West and you get sort of, oh, but is that really what they're playing? Are they really playing that? So we get that kind of recognition factor, but some of us really love it. And you don't really, if you're actually committed to it, and a couple of hours of really hard work, you have a couple, you know, you bring a hip flask for a bit of energy replacement. But if you really love it, then you don't think about what it's physically costing you until afterwards. The next day, you're absolutely shattered. But there are people who are never going to get that into it, and they're doing it as a kind of sufferance, and then there are people who just are totally into it and love it. And if the weather's bad, it's harder to enjoy it, it has to be said. But if the weather's nice and the crowd are nice and people are helping you, because sometimes people really help you on the parade. There was one year I remember, I could see the woman there, she's got that blue headdress on. What's her name?
Atiola.
She was kind of with the band, and she was being sort of I don't know. But she was dancing around the band and she had so much energy and she was so good. And she knew what Carnival was about. You could tell the way she interacted with people. She was some kind of spirit. And that made the band really got behind her and really performed that because she kind of, they followed her cue. She was totally into it and she's an amazing performer. She looks amazing. The costume that she was wearing was amazing. And the band just completely got into it. She was dancing all around us and everything. She just didn't stop for 2 hours. And that was fantastic. So when you've got people who really kind of, they're almost like guiding spirits who get you through it. When you've got people in the Carnival crew who'll do that, then that's great because then you feel like you're really part of something really big then. And then somewhere at the back of the mind, you're actually thinking, well, if it's Mardi Gras, they'll start doing this around 11 in the morning, and they'll still be doing it at 11 at night. So, 2 hours is not 2 hours is not that bad, really. I mean, they probably sound really ropey after 12 hours doing it, but you know, 2 hours isn't that bad, really. We're wusses.
Carnival has proved to be weatherproof in the sense that even when the weather is atrocious, and I'll refer to the 3 years in a row that 2005, 6 and 7, where from setting up the entire parade and the rest of it, we had, atrocious weather. Really, you know, our audience had to be completely weatherproofed, and that's mad. What are the difficulties involved of actually playing brass in a consistent torrent?
Well,
a downpour.
It's pretty much impossible. We have done it. We have done things where we've been waiting to go on the parade, and it just absolutely, the heavens have opened, and we've just taken it on the chin and just gone with it. But really, the rain does. Brass instruments do not like the rain. The worst thing is saxes and flutes and woodwind and things like that, because the mechanisms are very difficult, and it actually rusts the mechanism. So you can actually wreck an instrument if water gets in there. The other brass, trumpets and trombones, tubas, things like that, they're not so vulnerable because they don't have the delicate machinery. A bit of oil will sort it out. And they don't have the, you know, because... So that's it, really. And you always leave it up to the players. If a player is so worried about their instrument that they feel that they're going to have thousands of pounds of work done on it, then they just leave. They just don't do it. And I don't make them do it. It's up to them. I don't try and make them do it. I say, if you're concerned about your instrument, just... But a lot of people have got kind of, we'll have a cheaper old student instrument that they'll bring along to parades if they think it's going to rain, things like that. People generally tend to get into it, but it is really tricky. It's the same for everybody else. Your fingers are slippy on the instrument, and it means you can't play the notes. You intend to play a note, and you don't get the right note come out. the rain in your eyes is a problem. It's best if you've got some kind of headgear that keeps the rain out of your eyes, because that can be really horrible. Apart from that, same for everybody else, really. Same as it is for everybody else. It's horrible when it's raining, and that's one reason why street art hasn't really taken off in this country, because of the weather. Yeah, I mean, weather's fairly predictable in other places.
Obviously, this project, the anniversary project, deals primarily with Cardiff Carnival. But as you said in your opening remarks, you and I have worked on projects that predate Cardiff Carnival. And in Swicker, we've worked on other projects which I would share the same celebratory outlook, but their format and presentation have been different. Which ones stick in your mind as we look back at our history?
Well, before anybody has, any of us had got into arts, steady arts work, if there's such a thing exists, we did the fundraiser for the miners together, and that was a memorable experience just because we were taking a hell of a risk just wandering into pubs and playing Christmas carols and collecting music, but I think that was just making a big impact and then going as quickly as possible, and it was for a purpose.
We were trying to play the old heartstrings. It was specifically for presents for the striking miners' children, which you'd have thought most people couldn't get too annoyed about.
Well, most people didn't. Most people were really nice. There were a few exceptions, but most people were really nice about it, and we're right behind it. And you know,
we were attacked by skinheads in the Flora pub.
There were two pubs I remember where we were set upon for various reasons. One because political objections, and one because you shouldn't go in that pub really at that time on Friday night.
Yes. I believe you were groped in the Spotlands.
Yeah, I was groped in the Spotlands,
which is a great title for an album. Should you get to record it.
But then the Flora was a well-known right-wing pub where people weren't very sympathetic to what we were trying to do, and we were probably under a bit of physical danger there, but we got away eventually. So there was that, making a big impact. And I think that sort of had a spirit of street work about it, really. Just going there, make
guerrilla.
A big impact and get out. Yeah,
guerrilla music.
We also, as I said, there was the Mad Dog Project, which is where you pulled me into the Taliesin fold, and that is kind of what led to the street art, the Swicker and the carnival arts. But the big things that we worked together on were in 1998, which was the bridge, a bond. And the thing that we did up in Tolvain, which was called Crossing Borders, Torri Finniai. And those were a bit like oratorios. They were celebratory, and they were very much creating a musical structure that people could just get involved in, and right from people who'd never played samba, kids in schools who'd never played samba getting good enough to go on stage and perform samba in a very short period of time, to amateur choirs, to brass bands, to Wonder Brass were involved. We had a tabla group, we had a rapper, we had folk singer, gospel choir, things like that. So it was just bringing together a lot of existing groups and trying to make something interesting out of the combination and writing original music for them. That was the amazing thing, because it just gave me a big canvas to work with, it's a bit daunting to write for 100 people and then to try and coordinate a performance of 100 people. But it's that, you know, that big canvas is a really exciting project to be able to work on, really, write for.
The Bridge in particular is a project that I feel quite proud of, and your role in that was, you know, totally central in the rest of it. My only shame, looking back, the only shame is, of course, it was for one night only. It was one performance. I mean, we have it recorded. Mm. But there seems to be a body of work and a body of music in particular, which is, even now, I can listen to and think it's fabulous. We often have visitors or colleagues from elsewhere in the world, and sometimes from, you know, carnival cities, etc. And there's a track there that I play quite regularly and put it on. I don't let them know what it is, and I ask them what they think of it, and then they tell me they feel it's exuberant and wonderful. Who's written this? What is this? Where did this? Where's it from? And I explain it came from Cardiff, and largely from your head with all the resources that we pulled together. And for me, that's a very telling moment where they just go like, wow, that could be any carnival city in the world. That is carnival music.
I'm really proud of that. I've always, you know, ever since we did that, just because of at some point we planned it out, and then the money comes through, and then you put all the groups, you get all the groups, you talk to these groups, they're interested, you go and meet them, and they say, yeah, we'll do it. And then everybody goes away, and they say, right. And you say, right, I've got to write that music now. 45 minutes of music for probably about an hour of music. I can't remember exactly the length of it. It was definitely between 45 and an hour.
That sounds right.
For all those people. And and nobody's going to get off stage for the whole time. So you've got to try and keep them busy for the whole time. And that was, and who's going to help me write it? Well, nobody. But it was great. The one great thing about that was that I didn't feel like I was on my own because Menna was there as well. Menna Elvin wrote the words for that. And she was great because she was doing some kind of opera project. Mm. And she was faxing me lyrics from New York. It just felt really glamorous. Yeah, something, yeah, just getting a fax of a new bit that she'd written from New York. So even though she was doing something in New York and working, developing an idea for an opera or something, she was still thinking about this piece that we were going to do. So yeah, that was really exciting but really challenging as well. And I sweated a lot over that one.
I think you really pulled it off, as you have done with this interview. Rob Smith, what can I say other than it's been a pleasure working with you for more than 25 years.
Yeah.
And we did have a project in the pipeline again. Unfortunately, the money went west, which was called The Demon King and was going to reflect some of your more current musical influences and the rest of it. Shall we end just by, can you tell us where you're coming from, what that might hold in the future and your trip to
okay,
India?
Okay, yeah. Well, around the time that Madoc happened, which was 1989, I believe, a way of continuing that relationship that you developed with the Samaj Centre in Grangetown was to use Vishram Vasani, who is the local, he was a kind of music, community music leader, but it, obviously the place was also a temple. So it was very much to do with Hindu culture and Gujarat, where a lot of those guys came from. But it was to build on his expertise in music and to allow the kids in on that, bring the kids in on that. And one of the ways that we decided to do that was he would give us pieces of music to learn, and we'd notate it in Indian notation and then teach the kids how to play it on keyboard. So we were kind of cultural intermediaries, really, between Vishram's generation and I suppose his grandchildren or his children or grandchildren's generation. And that was great because I learned a lot about Indian music on that. I'd studied Indian music a little bit at university, but it's all very dry and theoretical when you do it there. But actually to get your hands dirty and get down there and actually learn some stuff and then teach it to some Indian kids or kids, Welsh kids, but whose ancestry is Indian. That was really exciting. And I've treasured that really as a special place in my musical treasure chest, if you like, for a long time. And this year I was able to renew that by going to India and working with some top flight Indian musicians, put a track together. I went with Jenny Allen. And we went over with some Welsh folk music. We combined it with Indian ragas and we created a track there with some Indian musicians, which is up on SoundCloud as we speak. But also around that time you were mooting a project which is based on the Demon King, the going over to Ceylon and rescuing, is it Princess Sita?
That's right, yeah, Ravana, evil swine, yeah. Kidnaps her.
And we were going to do a sort of carnivalesque version of that, but using Indian musical influences. And so at some point we should be able to do that because we've gone to India and done a bit of research and I kind of know how the music works well enough to kind of draw on that influence to create some music that would be specific to the project. And so I think hopefully at some point that project will happen.
I sincerely hope so. Yeah. Small point of raising the money.
Because we've done a lot of the groundwork, really, by applying for little bits of money from here and there and listening to and working with Indian musicians. And all the ammunition is there to create that project, so we should be able to do it at some point.
I sincerely hope to put that funding bullet in the gun and make it happen. Ross Smith, you are more than the carnival hero with 20 Cardiff carnivals under your belt. No, you're the mainstay of celebratory music in Wales, as far as I'm concerned.
We haven't talked about Samba. Oh. When we were first
when we were first doing music with brass, we were very much involved with the samba band as well. And so I think for me, for the early Swicker carnivals, samba was the sound of the carnival, and the brass was like more ambition than achievement. The problem with working with a samba band was that there's a lot of them and they play really loud. So obviously we were outgunned a lot of the time. So in the end, we've kind of done our own thing. But I think the hats off to the samba band, because the samba galés and all that, the samba offer is a much more open offer. You need a little bit of instrumental skill to do the brass stuff. Whereas with samba, it's a very open offer and people can get involved at a very... You know, beginners can get involved and learn the patterns and work their way up. So I think for me, probably more samba is the sound of carnival. But I agree, we've sort of contributed something to the sound of carnival and Carla.
I would never downgrade that. I think, yourself, Wonder Brass, the music, it's been the soundtrack that has animated the city streets. Mr. Rob Smith, we thank you and salute you.
Thank you.
Till later.